Hello, everybody, and welcome to this broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion, a show that we did on February 24th of last year, live from Vancouver, British Columbia. We wanted to get out of Minnesota. It was February. It was cold. Didn't dare go to Hawaii or Arizona or Florida for fear of what people would think. So we went up to Canada. And Vancouver, of course, is the tropics of Canada. Very lush, very green, full of flowers, even in February. It's almost an all-Canadian show. Young fiddler from Cape Breton Island, Natalie McMaster. Wonderful, big, exciting band from Quebec, La Boutine Souriante. There's a French hurdy-gurdy player, Pierre Humbert. And some of our colleagues from CBC Radio, Linda Cullen and Bob Robertson, Vicky Gabbro, and Bill Richardson. We hope you enjoy this show from last winter in Vancouver. About the time the first Spanish explorers were sailing along the coast of British Columbia past Vancouver, my dad's family arrived in Canada from the other direction. Our ancestor Thomas Keeler landed in Nova Scotia in 1773 and moved on to Dorchester in New Brunswick, where he met another branch of the family that came up from the colonies in Connecticut, escaping the violence that broke out there in the 1770s. My people in Connecticut were decent people, and they took the side of law and order, which was the wrong side to take. They were premature conservatives. They lost their houses and their property. The family moved to the west into Ontario, where my grandfather James was born in 1860. He went to Minnesota when he was 20 years old, and he didn't go to America to earn his fortune. He went there because his sister needed him desperately. She lived on a farm with her husband and little children, and the husband had tuberculosis. So James went down there. Soon after he arrived in the U.S., the brother-in-law died, and there Grandpa was. The farm wasn't much good. All these children to bring up, and his sister had no one else to turn to. That's what drew the Keelers to the United States, was a sense of Christian duty. And that's what keeps us there today. We're still needed down there. We still don't have things straightened out. But someday, if we ever do, I halfway think I might come back home to Canada, and it's always good to be here and visit. I'll hear that old piano from down the avenue. I smell the flowers, I look around for you. My sweet old someone, coming through that door. It's Saturday, the band is playing. Honey, could we ask for more? Coming to you from the Queen Elizabeth Hall in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Queen Elizabeth à Vancouver, en Colombie-Britannique.
It's a broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion.
Une émission enregistrée en direct du Prairie Home Companion.
Presented by Minnesota Public Radio.
Présentée par la radio publique du Minnesota.
With our special guests.
Avec nos invités spéciaux.
La Boutine Souriante. Fiddler Natalie McMaster, hurdy-gurdy player Pierre Humbert, and from CBC Radio, Vicky Gabbro, Linda Cullen, and Bob Robertson, and Bill Richardson, with our Prairie Home players Tim Russell, Sue Scott, and sound effects man Tom Keith, and the Guys All-Star Shoe Band.
Notre ensemble musical, le Guys All-Star Shoe Band.
Ah, they've never sounded so good.
Made possible with funds provided by Land's End.
Rendu possible grâce à des contributions de Land's End.
The 24-hour catalog company.
La compagnie de catalogue 24 heures.
Offering casual clothing and soft luggage.
Qui vous offre des vêtements sport et des sacs de voyage.
From the sweet farm country of Dodgeville, Wisconsin.
De Dodgeville, Wisconsin.
Oh. This is our first ever broadcast from Canada.
Ceci est notre toute première radiodiffusion en provenance du Canada.
Oh yeah. Good to be with you on a Saturday night.
Et nous sommes heureux d'être ici avec vous ce soir.
And it's wonderful to be bilingual.
C'est merveilleux d'être bilingue.
Coming from the Midwest, I always talk this slowly anyway.
De toute façon, étant du Midwest américain, je parle toujours aussi lentement.
With long pauses.
Avec de très longues pauses.
So, now you get some French in them.
Et maintenant, elles seront également en français.
Coming to Canada, of course, I have all of the American biases about Canadians.
Bien sûr, j'ai envers les Canadiens tous les stéréotypes possibles.
I look at Canadians and I think these are the people my mother always wanted me to hang out with in high school.
Je regarde les Canadiens et je me dis que c'est ce genre de personnes-là que ma mère aurait voulu que je fréquente au secondaire.
This is how my mother always hoped I would behave.
C'est comme eux que ma mère voulait que j'agisse.
And you know, my mother hoped that I would learn French.
Ma mère espérait bien que je puisse un jour parler français.
But all I know is merci.
Mais tout ce que je sais, c'est thank you.
Très bien. Très bien.
Very well.
Bonjour.
Hello.
Pardon.
Excuse me.
And quelle est la place le moins chère?
Et where's the cheapest seat?
That's right. There's a song about Vancouver. Lise Lemieux. She lived in Manitoba. Alberta was her name. Pious, humble, sober, and her life untouched by shame. She was a warehouse loader to support her mother dear. And they went to Minnesota on vacation every year. And then one day she cried aloud, I'm almost 33. If I don't fly the coop today, there'll be no life for me. She packed her bag that evening and left before the dawn. With a note beside the toaster that said, Mother, I've gone to find Vancouver and sit out in the sun to see the flowers on the trees and the smiles on everyone. I'll miss you, darling mother, and try to write or call. But when you find Vancouver, you may not return at all.
Vous savez, Monsieur Keeler, Vancouver, c'est une ville formidable, pleine de monde, mais vraiment branchée.
Sounds wonderful to me.
Vous pouvez marcher dans le parc Stanley au mois de février. Vous pouvez vous arrêter, prendre un café latte et crémé, bien sûr. Et ensuite, prendre un souper aux fruits de mer dans un restaurant avec une vue, évidemment, incroyable sur la mer et les montagnes.
Is that right?
Oui, c'est merveilleux, croyez-moi.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Tant mieux.
I believe you. I believe you. He lived in Nova Scotia, among the cold salt mists. Among the cold, emotionally challenged Calvinists. They ate oatmeal three times a day and hardly ever spoke, except for Christmas Eve when they would tell a small dry joke. And then one day this pale young man said, why must life be dull? Why must all life's joys be marked with a crossbones and a skull? Why follow what John Knox taught and be depressed and gray? I'd rather do the foxtrot. And he headed west that day. He flew out to Vancouver to lie upon the beach in a bright red swimsuit with the Molsons within reach. He learned to talk to strangers and smile and relax. And when they find Vancouver, they don't think of Halifax. Oh, you people don't experience winter here the same as normal people, do you?
Ouf. En moyenne, ici, l'hiver, il fait 43 degrés, puis l'été, environ 66.
Oh, I envy you.
D'où venez-vous, vous?
Minnesota.
Ah, l'état des réfrigérateurs puis le berceau des luthériens, je pense. Oui, oui.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Les gens chez vous, est-ce qu'ils dansent? Mm. Est-ce qu'ils rient? Est-ce qu'ils flirtent?
Mm. Well, sometimes we do, yeah.
Des fois?
Yeah, sometimes.
La vie est courte, profitons-en.
Mm, you're absolutely right. I've never heard it said that way before, though. He lived out on the prairie, a broadcaster by trade. His fortunes in America had long commenced to fade. Although he'd been successful in various formats, he found it rather stressful trying to race with younger rats. One day he thought, I ought to go, but where's a place for me? Where there is sun and not much snow, and they have the CBC. A sophisticated city with natural grandeur near. And then three lovely syllables came drifting to his ear. Vancouver, son, Vancouver, when life becomes blasé, just call up the movers and head for English Bay, where half the year is springtime and half the year is fall. And when they find Vancouver, they may not go home. Thanks to Lise Lemieux from the CBC French Service. Good to be with you on a Saturday night. Our show tonight brought to you by the American Duct Tape Council, brought to you by Bertha's Kitty Boutique for persons who care about cats. And also brought to you by Fred Farrell, Animal Calls. When it comes to animal calls, there's one name to trust, and that's Fred Farrell.
Hello, this is Fred Farrell. Like most of you, I love nature, so long as it stays out there where it belongs. But when nature comes in too close to where I live, then it's gone too far. Vancouver is a place with tremendous natural amenities, mountains and forests and fjords, etc., all of which raise your property values. But when you come home late at night and find a bull walrus on your lawn, or a moose, or an elk, or a caribou, well, then that's more than you need. You can call the police, but all they'll do is call in the helicopters and shine floodlights down on your place and send in rangers with tranquilizer guns and put it to sleep there, and then they bring in the winch and haul it out, and meanwhile it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and who needs it? There's got to be an easier way. And that's why I developed my series of alpha male animal calls. Calls that say to that animal, look, this is my territory, and that's my urine in the bushes. And what it means is, beat it. 6 calls in one, including coyote, bear, cathawk, cougar, mountain goat, and steelhead trout.
Yes, Fred Farrell, the name to trust when it comes to animal calls.
Friends, it's a great pleasure to welcome to our stage here at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre in Vancouver a band that comes from all the way over the other side of the country. They have a magnificent poster that's up all over town advertising their appearance here in March, so you'll have a chance to see them outdoors at the big French Spring Festival under a tent playing near the city. It's a gorgeous poster from Bruegel with pictures of large peasant women and large men with cod pieces dancing furious dances. What is the French word for cod piece, monsieur?
Cod piece.
Huh?
Cod piece.
Pièce de cod. Something. Won't you welcome here from Quebec, Laboutine Souriant.
Sans prendre un verre, t'en iras-tu sans boire?
À quoi ça sert-il de t'en plaire? À quoi ça sert-il d'être aimé? Voilà mon camarade à terre. Il a la vie tout étirée, car il est mort, le pauvre corps. Pour le réveiller, trinquons la bouteille.
Comment dors-tu?
T'en iras-tu sans prendre un verre? T'en iras-tu sans boire?
T'en iras-tu sans prendre un verre? T'en iras-tu sans boire?
Oh, médecin, belle médecine, venez donc lui tordre le bout. Vous le verrez bien à sa mine, s'il est mort ou bien s'il est sous. Car il est mort, le pauvre corps. Pour le réveiller, trinquons la bouteille. C'est ton vin qui est. cueille les morts, le couvre-corps, pour les réveiller, t'es comme la bouteille.
T'en
iras-tu sans prendre un verre, t'en iras-tu sans boire. T'en iras-tu sans prendre un verre, t'en iras-tu sans boire.
From Quebec, Labadine Surian. Take another bow. Our show coming to you from Vancouver in British Columbia. Coming to you from Canada, the land of the taciturn educated people. Up here, where people do not wear clothing with writing on it. So, an amazing fact, hard for us to get used to. Country where people tend to stand on the curb and wait for the light to change and the walk light to come on before they go across. Americans jaywalk as a matter of honor, of course, but in Canada they figure what's the rush? It's a country of polite people where the graffiti tends to be in complete sentences on the walls. Yes. Can I help you?
Excuse me, you're Mr. Keeler?
Yeah, right, yes.
Yeah, hi, this is my wife, Gert, eh?
Hey.
Yeah.
Hi.
I'm Lackey.
Uh-huh, that's your name, or... You probably heard that joke.
No, I heard that all over and over and over.
Yeah.
No, we're Gert and Lackey McCaw from Chilliwack. We're big fans of Bill Richardson, and he said you'd be here, so we wanted to welcome you to Canada.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Just like Lackey said, eh? You know, say, now you're not related to the Keelers from Goat Lake, are you? You know, we got a cottage up there. Oh, yeah. Vern and Vera, they're from Moose Jaw.
I think you're right. I'm not related to them. I think that was a good guess. Are you two are Canadian then?
Are you joking?
I guess I wasn't. Tell me something. Tell me a couple of things about Canada, would you?
Oh, sure.
Do you mind if I ask you a
question? Fire away.
Okay. It's not a republic like America, right? So the prime minister is not your head of state.
No. He's just the prime minister. Yeah, he's not the head of anything, eh?
Okay, but but you've got a head of state, right?
Oh yeah. That's the Queen of England.
I see. And what does she have to do with running Canada exactly?
Well, nothing at all. Just, you know, because you're the head of state for Canada doesn't mean you actually do anything.
I see.
No.
But I suppose she couldn't anyway because she lives in another country.
Oh, that's right, she does. Yeah, but she does have a representative here in Ottawa, the Governor General. But, of course, he's not the governor.
No, he's not even a general. Lord knows why they call him that. I don't know.
I see. Well, that's interesting. What does the Governor General do?
Nothing.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now we're getting somewhere. There must be a group of people somewhere who run Canada, actually.
Oh, now you're talking about the Privy Council.
I see. And they're called that because they're...
Well, because they're privy to whatever the head of state does.
Uh-huh. But the head of state does nothing, so they would be privy to nothing.
Well, now you're starting to catch on, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the Privy Council, they just sit around all day and... Maybe it's the other meaning of privy
we're not even talking about. Not going to touch that kind of a joke here. The Constitution, then, doesn't that sort of lay out how things are done in Canada?
Oh, well, you know, if the nine provinces get together, you know...
Yeah, but I thought there were 10. Aren't there 10 provinces in Canada?
Yeah, but you see, Quebec wouldn't sign the Constitution.
But they're part of the country.
Well, I don't know. What time is it now?
So you mean they're not legally a part of Canada?
Well, that's right. Not legally part of Canada. Sort of a common law arrangement we got going with.
I see.
Yeah, living in sin, if you like.
Okay.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
So you've got a head of state who doesn't have anything to do with the state, and you have a governor general who's not a governor or a general, and a privy council that's privy to nothing, and you have a constitution that doesn't include everybody.
Exactly.
So Canada, one of the great countries of the world, essentially has nobody at the wheel.
Yeah, that's right, eh? I think it's an idea whose time has come.
Well, you would know better than I.
That's right. Well, you know, look at you and your primary election down in New Hampshire, eh? I saw it.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, that's an odd way to choose a president, eh? A primary election.
Now, why on earth would you have little kids in first and second grade choose a president? I'll never know.
Exactly.
And look who they choose, those kids. Pat Buchanan.
Boy, isn't that something, eh?
I can say, you know, without fear of contraception, if he was Canadian, he'd be considered a crazed lunatic.
Well, all the more reason he should stay down there, I guess, eh?
Anyways, you know, we just dropped by to say hello.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Long as we're here, though, would you help us find our seats?
Well, did you bring the tickets?
Well, I think they're in section F, row 14 or 15 or something.
Where's the tickets?
Well, you got the tickets, don't you?
I told you they were on the table by the umbrella stand.
Linda Cullen and Bob Robertson. This portion of our show brought to you by Bertha's Kitty Boutique, and we'll be right back after this message.
In your nose and in the air, rows and flows and clumps of hair, it's on the couch and everywhere. I've looked at dogs that way, and how they need to take a walk for hours all around the block. I could have been a star of rock, but dogs got in my way. I've looked at dogs from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's inconvenience I recall. I really don't like dogs at all.
Yes, friends, if a dog has you worn out with its paranoia, its constant craving for love, its tendency to eat strange things, then to regurgitate them, its inability to take care of itself, maybe it's time you upgraded to another type of pet. Yes, cats have that emotional stability and that sleek personal elegance that you deserve in your home. All this week, it's the George Washington's birthday cat sale at Bertha's Kitty Boutique. Low prices on all of our current stock, and we're offering big trade-ins on dogs. So why not trade in that big hair bag on a pet you can be proud of? A message from Bertha's Kitty Boutique for persons who care about cats. I was so busy, I was late coming over before the show. I never even got to meet Natalie McMaster. How are you?
Not too bad, yourself?
I'm good, not so bad. I'm getting along just fine. So you came from out from Cape Breton Island, which is off the coast of Nova Scotia.
That's right, tiny little island over there, way, way over, but full of music and dancers and singers and everything else, and fiddlers, of course. That's why I'm here.
That's right. Just about everybody there is either a fiddler or knows how to dance, right?
That's right.
Nobody sits down at dances in Cape Breton Island, do they?
No, because you wouldn't be a Cape Bretoner if you did.
Now, your mother's a dancer, right? You grew up in a home where your mother danced. She was a step dancer.
Yeah, my mother was a fairly well-known dancer in her day, and she taught me to dance when I was five. So that was the first thing that I did that involved music. Mm-hmm.
And your uncle is a fiddler?
Yeah, Buddy McMaster, quite a well-known fiddler in here too, I guess. Yeah, there's music on both sides of my family, so it was inevitable that I'd end up playing the fiddle, I guess.
They set a high standard for you, Natalie. Mm-hmm. It's here's your time to fulfill your family's hopes and dreams. What you gonna do for us right now?
Twinkle little star. Actually, I'm going to start out with a slow air to change the pace a bit, and it's called Lament for the Death of Reverend Archie Beaton.
Natalie McMaster.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is this my mic?
Thank you. Well, what's great about an audience this size, even though I can't see you, you sound great, you make a lot of noise. That's good. Well, I'm going to introduce who I have with me here. That beast of a thing behind me here, the big grand piano, we have from Cape Marybridge, Cape Breton Island, Tracy Dares. And from Halifax, Nova Scotia, playing a mean guitar, David McIsaac. I might mention that the East Coast Music Awards just occurred recently, and Dave won. He took all the awards. The guy who won the most awards of the evening, including Male Artist of the Year, and he's here tonight. So, I'm gonna do a duet here with Dave before we get Tracy to join in, and I'm gonna start off with a tune called Miss Lyles.
Natalie McMaster, dancing and playing. Dancing on the front of our stage as she played that reel. It's something you can do when you're in your early 20s, and so I hope she does a lot of it as long as she can.
Our show coming to you from this balmy coastal city of Vancouver, British Columbia, up in this gorgeous green part of Canada, where they get enough rain to support tremendous vegetation up here. It's really, it's almost like a hydroponic city up here. They set a Canadian record about 10 years ago, 33 consecutive days of rain. I remember what I read on plaques when I go around a city. There is enough rain, Mr. Richardson, sir. Mr. Bill Richardson of the BBC, sir. There is enough rain that falls in British Columbia in an average year, if there is such a thing, as much rain as the United States of America uses in fresh water a year. It all falls out here, which, of course, is what supports the biggest industry of British Columbia, which is the Douglas fir and the red cedar and the hemlock and the
forestry
and the white pine. Forestry,
yeah,
was the
is the word you'd be looking
was the word
for.
I was, looking for right there. It also creates. I saw grass growing out of an asphalt roof in the city. Tremendous vegetation.
Oh, we all got that around here.
Vines. Well, I don't see any on you. I hope you don't see any on me.
Well, if you recall what you read on plaques, you could have a second career as a dental hygienist.
My, I'm just going to walk away from that.
And you'd be well advised.
No, no, no. It's such a gorgeous city. But I saw a sign. I saw it in a plant store. They were advertising moss killer. I've never killed moss in my life. I didn't know.
Now, how are they spelling moss?
M-O-S-S.
Okay, because I have some friends called Moss, which is, I mean, might have been them.
We're talking to Bill Richardson here, who's the poet laureate of this part of Canada and perhaps other parts as well.
Self-appointed.
And who, well, somebody has to appoint themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be an elective position in a country like this. You just have to grab onto it. Hold on as long as you can. Here's a book that's coming out in America soon called The Bachelor Brothers Bed and Breakfast, which is a great title.
Thank you.
And if that does well, why, your collection of poems will come out in America as well, I should assume. You going to read one for us?
Yeah. The good thing about being the self-appointed poet laureate is that you get to make all the rules yourself. It's not like waking up one morning and saying, I think I'll be Archbishop of Canterbury or anything like that, where there are already rules and protocols. What I do is I celebrate small domestic events in people's lives. And this poem is a kind of cautionary tale, which is directed against, it's a sort of warning against excessive neatness, against excessive persnicketiness amongst neat freaks. And it celebrates my favorite vacuum cleaner attachment, which is the crevice tool, which I like mostly because they called it that and got away with it. This is an epic poem with the Iliad of Canada by some critics. It is chock-a-block, as is all my oeuvre, with Arthurian and biblical references. Once, not very long ago, and not so far away, lived a man called Bob, who, at the dawning of each day, vowed to rid the world of grime and keep it all pristine. He'd dab his dainty wrists and lobes with Vim and Mr. Clean, then don his starched and ironed jeans and freshly laundered shirt and stride out in the germy world to vanquish filth and dirt. No spill nor stain nor stinking drain would valiant Bob deter. He'd fight them with his trusty sponge and mop Excalibur. He had a potent vacuum he could use for heavy jobs. And any guy would die to have a crevice tool like Bob's. So long, so wide, so true, so tried, imbued with lasting power, the kind of tool to make you drool and run a chilling shower. But that's enough of all this stuff. I'll get myself in trouble. You'll think I'm crude if I intrude with rude entendre doubles. Let's hearken back to Bob and to the story that's at hand. His mission was to purge the scourge of dirt throughout the land. He'd travel through the countryside and challenge every mess. He had 1,000 solvents to alleviate distress. If gallant lords and damsels couldn't cope with massive dust balls, they did not pout, they had no doubt that it was Bob they must call. A breathless runner one day came, his ruby lips were trembling. How now, brown cow, asked noble Bob, no need of fear dissembling. Oh, Master Bob, the runner sobbed, his eyes both wide and feral. We have construed, oh, fearsome news, our nation is in peril. I do not sing of petty things like cash or constitutions, but rather of a dust ball who's demanding restitution. No, not some pallid, squalid ball who lurks beneath the bed. No tiny hallway tumbleweed, the frightened runner said. No, this is one mad mama with a mean gleam in her eye. She's Yukon cold and twice as big again as PEI. She's called you names like nit and twit and git and even slob. She's queen of all the dust balls, and she's out to get you, Bob. Oh, is that so? Ho, 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 cried Bob. Well, let her threaten. That dusty yob has not met Bob nor faced his fearsome weapons. My faithful mop, Excalibur, will end her grisly rule. The dreadful wretch won't soon forget my mighty crevice tool. So out Bob strode along the road, cheered on by gladsome crowds. He swaggered full of confidence, erect, correct, and proud. As David slew Goliath and as Beowulf oft Grendel, Bob was preened to meet the queen and prove she could be handled. He smelled her ere he saw her, and he gasped at what he saw. A tangled mass of clinging dirt around a gaping maw. She had a tumbling swagger, and she had a vicious sneer. She pulsed and loomed, and then she boomed, "Hey, Bob, get over here. I see you brought some toys along in order to defeat me. Is that your famous crevice tool, or are you pleased to meet me?" Oh, foul wretch, big Bob kvetched, from what dank grave exhumed? Now leave our land, no man will stand to hear his tool impugned. So fell they too. I know that you have never, ever seen so grim a sight as was the fight of Robert and the Queen. He dashed her with Excalibur, she countered every charge. His vicious words were clearly heard from here to Lake Lebarge. He doused her with ammonia, and she uttered piercing shrieks. She filled his lungs with dust and dung till Bob once strong grew weak. From brute to wimp, all wilted limp, he spent his warrior's lust. She showed no ruth, but proved the truth that man's no match for dust. Bob will never more be seen. His mission has been squelched. His only sordid epitaph was when the Dust Queen belched. My tale is done, the moral is one that's very plain to see. Dust is how you started out, and dust is what you'll be.
Thank you, Bill Richardson. And the Ballad of the Queen of the Dust Balls. Our show coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. I want to welcome here a musician who has come to live in Vancouver because he married a woman who comes from here. He met her over in his home, over in Lyon, in France. He's come now to live in her city. She was an English-speaking Canadian when Pierre met her, but now, of course, she's become French-speaking. How could you not? Pierre Humbert, who's brought with him his hurdy-gurdy, this beautiful medieval instrument here. It's a great comfort, must be, when you're so far away from home, you're in a strange place with strange people, to have your music with you, isn't it?
No, no strange people.
No.
Nice people, laid back West Coast.
Okay. What are you going to do for us on this machine?
On this machine, I'm going to play some old not medieval, but old traditional French tunes, like the first one is an aubade, which is a slow tune. The lovers, the boys were singing, you know, down on the windows of their love. And then it's followed by a couple of dances, rigodon, rigodon-bressant.
Pierre Humbert. Pierre Humbert and his hurdy-gurdy. He's going to play some more on the second half of our show. And La Boutine Souriante will be back, and Natalie McMaster, of course. We also have with us on our show today, and we'll bring them out in the second half of our show, some friends from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the CBC. You already met Bill Richardson and Linda Cullen and Bob Robertson. And Vicki Gabbereau will be out as well to join our Prairie Home Players in a radio drama, The Lives of the Cowboys, with Dusty and Lefty. We're having a good time here tonight with you. I just wanted you to know that. I want to read a little poem for you. There's a poem by Margaret Atwood that I like a lot, as I like so much of her stuff. It's from a new book by her entitled Morning in the Burned House, published in Canada by McClelland and Stewart and in the U.S. by Houghton Mifflin. A poem by Margaret Atwood entitled February. Winter, time to eat fat and watch hockey. In the pewter mornings, the cat, a black fur sausage with yellow Houdini eyes, jumps up on the bed and tries to get onto my head. It's his way of telling whether or not I'm dead. If I'm not, he wants to be scratched. If I am, he'll think of something. He settles on my chest, breathing his breath of burped up meat and musty sofas, purring like a washboard. Some other tomcat, not yet a capon, has been spraying our front door, declaring war. It's all about sex and territory, which are what will finish us off in the long run. Some cat owners around here should snip a few testicles. If we wise hominids were sensible, we'd do that too. Or eat our young like sharks. But it's love that does us in, over and over again. He shoots, he scores! And famine crouches in the bedsheets, ambushing the pulsing eiderdown. And the wind chill factor hits 30 below, and pollution pours out of our chimneys to keep us warm. February, month of despair, with a skewered heart in the center. I think dire thoughts and lust for French fries with a splash of vinegar. Cat, enough of your greedy whining and your small pink bumhole. Off my face. You're the life principle, more or less. So get going on a little optimism around here. Get rid of death. Celebrate increase. Make it be spring. February.
So, voilà, nous sommes arrivés à la fin de la première heure de notre émission en direct. Nous revenons tout de suite après ce court entr'acte à tout de suite. Vous êtes à l'écoute du Prairie Home Compagnon en direct de Vancouver.
Bravo! I think that was, and so that's it for the first hour of our show from Vancouver, British Columbia.
British calamity, what did you almost say?
It's Freudian. There will be a brief intermission, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Prairie Home Companion. I can't do this in English.
A Prairie Home Companion from Vancouver.
Vancouver,
back
merci.
A Prairie Home Companion is made possible by Land's End Direct Merchants, the company that promises every customer quality first and always, always service. You can call today for a free copy of our Spring Prairie Home Companion catalog featuring the brand new comedy theater audio cassettes, music from favorite performers, and much more. The toll-free number is 1-800-967-4001. 1-800-967-4001. A Prairie Home Companion site on the World Wide Web is located at phc.mpr.org and is supported by a grant on behalf of the employees of Netscape Communications Corporation. Our snail mail address is Minnesota Public Radio, 45 East 7th Street, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55101. Stay tuned for the second half of A Prairie Home Companion. More from Labutin Souriant, from Natalie McMaster, Pierre Humbert, and the Cowboys, Dusty and Lefty. And, of course, the news from Lake Wobegon as well.
This is PRI, Public Radio International.
Of our live broadcast of a Prairie Home Companion.
Bienvenue à la deuxième partie, à la deuxième heure de Prairie Home Companion.
Coming to you from the Queen Elizabeth Theater.
En direct de Vancouver, au théâtre Queen Elizabeth.
In Vancouver, British Calamity, Columbia.
En Colombie-Britannique.
Hey, you do great at the French. English is a very good language. I do am fond of it. And I'm more fond of it the more I go away and travel.
We're here in Vancouver congratulating our friends at the CBC, Société Radio Canada, on their 60th anniversary, 60 years old, the CBC, operating two French language radio services, performance and news, and two English language services, coast to coast, and also shortwave international transmissions, and a service for Canada's northern people. We're so pleased that they would join us here on stage. You've met Bill and Bob and Linda, and also with us is Vicky Gabbro. Stand up and take a bow, won't you?
Voilà.
The Lives of the Cowboys, brought to you by San Joaquin Brand Saddle Warmers. Your horse will appreciate it, too. And now, today's episode of The Lives of the Cowboys.
Okay, that right up yonder up there, that's the Canadian border there, Dusty. So comb your hair and wipe the spit off your chin. Okay?
Okay.
And when that ranger up there asks you if you're coming for business or for pleasure, you say pleasure. They like that up here.
Pleasure, yeah. Well, that's the truth. Yep. Coming up here to taste the beer. Hope it's as good as they say.
Yep.
Lefty?
Yeah?
Should I tell them that I'm a communist sympathizer?
You're a communist what?
Sympathizer.
Dusty, how can you be a communist sympathizer? There ain't hardly any communists left.
Well, all the more reason they need our sympathy.
Dusty, when you're approaching the border of another country, it's no time to talk about politics, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Whoa, whoa,
whoa. Easy. Easy there, easy. Good afternoon, sir.
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Take it that this gold line across here is the border, and you're the Canadian border ranger.
Yeah, could there be any do to boot it?
No. Not more. No more, not in my mind, there ain't.
And I would take it that you two are American cowboys. Will I be right?
Yep, right, right.
Okay. Right. Well, then would you mind showing me your fast draw?
Oh, glad to. There, that's my fast draw.
That was splendid. And you, sir, could I hear you whoop?
Well, absolutely. I'd be my pleasure and my privilege to whoop for you then.
Whoop.
Whoop, yeah, whoop, 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 yeah.
Well, that's good.
There.
That's very fine. That's authentic. There you go. Welcome to Canada. Bienvenue au Canada.
Hey. Thank you, merci, and so forth.
Let's go. Then. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, get on. Get on. Get on.
That stew smells good.
Yep, sure does.
Nice campsite here.
Mm-hmm.
You care for another beer?
Yeah, sure.
You care for honey, amber, golden, or pale?
Well, I don't know. Pale, I suppose.
You care for the top fermenting or the bottom fermenting?
I don't know. Where'd you go for this beer, anyway?
Went to a micro brewery called the Brewhaha.
Mm.
Yeah. They got everything there. They got the lagered pilsners. They got the lambics. They got the frambuesen beer. They got the dislocator stout.
Oh, well, give me some of that then.
Okay. There you go.
Thank you.
No problem. Now, Vancouver is just up over that hill, you know.
Yep. We can go over there to Vancouver there tomorrow. They got themselves a new library and everything.
Yep.
Yep. Go there and withdraw some books and come back up here and read them. Sound like fun, huh?
Yep.
Got about everything a person want in Vancouver. They got no communists, though.
Oh?
No, no. Mm. It's too bad, in a way. If there'd been some communists, I mean, more people would have heard of Canada. You know, they would have gotten some publicity out of it.
Yep. Yeah, I never knew there was one until about a year ago.
Never knew there was one what?
Canada.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I knew about the geese and the ginger ale, but I thought it was just a brand name, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know that. You're down in America, and you've got a product, and you want people to think it's not too fancy, but it's good for you. You just call it Canadian, that's all.
Yeah. You know, like Canadian bacon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Canadian bacon, you naturally assume the pigs came from good families and went to college.
Right.
Yeah. Even them vegetarians eat it.
Yeah, they do. Of course they do.
What? Yeah. What's that?
What?
What is that?
Who?
Something out there.
Where?
I don't know. Who's there?
Bob.
What you doing out in the dark there, mister?
Why do you want to know?
Just tell us or we'll shoot.
Yep. Shoot at what?
Man has a point, Dusty.
Yeah.
Can't see him.
What are you doing lurking around out there looking at us, huh?
What makes you think I was looking at you?
Yeah, he's Canadian, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't that paranoid to assume I'm looking at you?
Well, you ask sure you.
Hey, easy,
there are pistols
easy,
what
easy,
I do.
Easy. Take it
yeah,
easy.
Just
ignore him. He'll ignore him. He'll go away.
Well, you've ignored us for years, and we're still here.
Just don't.
Oh, I...
Don't answer him. Don't answer him. No way to answer that kind of moralism anyway. They're like that. That's why they call them God's frozen people. There.
Yeah.
Good in the worst sense of the term, I tell you.
Yeah. Well, they sure do make a good beer.
Yeah,
you know, this top fermenting Pilsner peach yogurt double latte is a heck of a beer, lefty.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, there's somebody what? Over there now.
Who's that?
Don't worry about it. It's only me. Hello, hello. Hello, hello. It's only me. Gretchen's the name. Jean Gretchen.
Well, Mr. Creighton, we gave at the office.
Yeah.
No, 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 no. I am not a charity. I am Jean Chrétien, the Prime Minister.
Of Canada?
Yes, of course. You know, somebody has to do it.
What's the Prime Minister of Canada doing wandering around in the dark?
This surprises you?
Well, sort of, yes.
Boy, now I recognize you. I noticed in the paper the other day you walked into a whole crowd of protesters. You tried to croak this guy.
Well, I was only trying to protect him from himself, you know.
I see. Well, okay.
I mean, he was saying things, you know, that if he had continued, he would have embarrassed himself.
Well, you sure? You got him in a good headlock there.
Yes, I did, but it was for his own good, you know. I was just adjusting his spine, you know. Anyway, now I'm out here looking for the Privy Council, you know. I thought it was out here.
I think it's behind that tree over there. Right over there.
Help yourself.
You take it easy out there.
Well, that's a nice guy. What church is he minister of?
He's
then?
The Canadian church, I believe. It's it's sort of like the Baptists, but it's more peaceful, you know. It's not so much division and everything.
Say, how's that stew coming?
It smells just about done.
Where are you going, Lefty? Oh, no. Oh, you're not going to sing, are you?
Oh, the musical urge just strikes ever so often, don't it, Dusty? Boy, these things get rancid when you carry them around on horseback there, don't they?
Ouch.
Oh. I left my heart in San Francisco. I left my brains in L.A. I left my knees in Seattle, climbing up those hills all day. I left my arms at the border. They took both guns, but that's all right. I lose my liver in Vancouver tonight. I'm going north to drown my sorrows in a pail of moosehead ale. Unless I find a lighted cabin out along the northern trail, where a woman waits to meet me who can turn me toward the right. I'll find a lover in Vancouver tonight. Yodelay.
I wish you wouldn't do that.
Well, it's just yodeling dust. It's harmless.
Yeah, well, for some reason, it makes me think of death by strangulation. What? What is it? What?
Something's out there.
Where? Out there in the dark?
Yeah. Who's there?
You talking to me?
Well, if you're out there in the dark, then I guess we'd be talking to you, ma'am.
Well, I wasn't exactly sure. I mean, I smelled the smoke and I heard this cry for help.
Well, that was me yodeling, ma'am.
Oh, well, you're American, aren't you?
Was that just a lucky guess, or was that something we said, ma'am?
No, I just followed the trail of empty beer cans.
Oh, well.
What are you looking at me like that for, ma'am?
Well, you're in radio, aren't you?
Yes, I was, ma'am. At one time, I was a DJ. KCOW. Was on in every feedlot in Wyoming, I tell you. Had an audience of 50,000 head. I just played Wilf Carter over and over. You get better weight gain with Wilf Carter, I find.
I could tell you were in radio the moment I looked at you. You got kind of a radio face.
Oh? Ma'am?
I want to marry you.
What? Me?
I was Miss Canada 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I'm still Miss Canada.
I see.
My name is Canada. Vicky Canada.
Oh, I see.
Well, I do this radio show. It's called the Vicky Canada Show. And I want you.
You mean?
Exactly.
Oh.
Tell me, do you like long walks and sunsets and gourmet cooking, the arts, books, conversations, intimacy?
Well, long walks kind of hurt your feet if you wear cowboy boots, and I don't notice sunsets that much anymore, and I like conversations, and I hope to have one someday, and I don't know about intimacy. I tend to break out in a rash, tell you the truth.
I want you anyway.
You do?
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to him.
She's talking to me, Dusty.
Sorry.
I always wanted an American.
You did?
Well, I don't actually approve of them, and yet they excite me in ways I can't quite explain.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
Well, I would give anything for you.
Oh?
I'm wild for you.
Yes?
Your voice, your face, your lips, your tongue, your teeth, your cuspids, your bicuspids, your molars.
Ma'am.
Even.
Ma'am, a woman who wanted me that much is a woman whose judgment I could never trust.
What?
Ma'am, it could never be. You'd be giving up your city, giving up your health care.
Well, I didn't mean I'd move to the U.S.
No?
Of course not. I mean, I may be wild about you, but I have my limits.
So it can never be, then?
Not unless you want to stay here.
I have an allergy to mildew.
Alas.
I guess I better say goodbye, ma'am.
Yes. Just let me look at you.
Yes, ma'am.
No, don't talk. Let's not cheapen it with talk. One glance.
Yes.
Just one touch.
Oh.
And now I leave. Goodbye. Forever. Alas.
Oh, I wow. Goodbye, Miss Canada.
She sure was sweet, Lefty.
Yeah, she sure was, Will. It's a cowboy's life, I tell you.
Yeah.
It's a cowboy's life. Unrequited love wherever you go. I say, if your heart don't break once a day, it shows a lack of imagination.
Well, how's that stew coming?
Yeah, it's just about done.
You care for another beer?
Yeah, sure. Hey, merci, pal.
The Lives of the Cowboys. If your feet go to sleep in the stirrups, why not try Santa Fe brand vibrating stirrups? They relieve stress, and your horse will sure appreciate them, too.
Thank you, Vicki Gaboreau, Bill Armstrong. Thank you, Linda Cowan and Bob Robertson, with Sue Scott there and Tim Russell as Dusty. Let's welcome back here from Quebec a band whose names I am just about to mispronounce, each and every one of them. Yves Lambert, Réjean Archambault, Michel Bordelot, Martin Racine. We have Jean Fréchette. We have Jocelyn Lapointe, André Verreau. Robert Ellis is good here. Thank you, Robert. And we have Denis Fréchette at the piano. Monsieur,
oui.
Welcome back.
Oh, okay.
La boutine souriante.
Merci beaucoup. Thank you. Thank you to the Prairie Home Companion. En français, ça serait merci beaucoup pour les petits compagnons de la petite maison dans la prairie. And for the next song, everybody stand up, you know, for the next song. It's very lively dance, you know. Une danse extrêmement dynamique et extrêmement vivante, populaire de l'Australie. Oh! Allez-y, in Asia and Australia, mesdames et messieurs, ladies and gentlemen, the Rapati Petagne. Lucien s'est trouvé un mari.
Lucien s'est trouvé un mari.
Elle l'a trouvé, il était trop petit. Oh, la petite médaille.
Tapitouli, lili, tapitouli, la. Tapitouli, lili, tapitouli, la.
Oh. Elle l'a trouvé, il était trop petit.
Elle l'a trouvé, il était trop petit.
Que dans son lit elle le perdit. Oh, la petite médaille.
Tapitouli, lili, tapitouli, la. Tapitouli, lili, tapitouli, la.
Le feu dans la paille a surpris. Oh, la petite médaille.
La pétouline, la pétouline.
so gris. Retrouvo son marido, si ahora me espida en la bitulini, la bitulina, la bitulini, la bitulina.
Labatine Soriant. What a gorgeous song. We're all exhausted. Thank you for that. Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out there on the prairie. It's been cold and rainy out there, and it's been hard on people who do not come from my same genetic stock. There aren't too many of them there. People in Minnesota have seen every kind of weather there is. We may claim not to, but we've seen it. Nothing could possibly surprise us at this point. I remember when I was a boy, I saw snow fall on a family picnic on the 4th of July. We were sitting at the picnic table, and snowflakes came down and landed on my bratwurst and my potato salad. I've mentioned this to people in my family since then, and they say, no, that never happened. No such thing could have happened. It was fluff from the cottonwood trees. But it was not fluff, it was snowflakes. It was like magic. They landed on the table there. People in my family say, oh, you were just seeing something. You were probably pressing your eyeballs. And I admit I did do that. As a kid, I used to enjoy pressing on my eyeballs so that I could see these beautiful flashes of light, white and yellow and orange, and those beautiful greens and blues. I really enjoyed doing it a lot. I never took drugs during the 60s because I sort of had taken care of that already.
just by pressing on my eyeballs. But this was not flashes, and it was not fluff from the tree. It was flakes. It came down, and it landed on my potato salad on a July day. It didn't drift or anything, because it was 83 degrees. But there was a little chill in the air, and then the flakes came down. And I remember looking at my mother, and she said, "I sure hope I didn't put too much onions in this potato salad." And I said, "No, it tastes just fine." In Minnesota, we have this ability to put reality off to one side until we're prepared to deal with it. It's how we get through winter. So the miracle snow falling in July, it meant something. I forget what it meant to me at the time. But my family denies that it ever happened, and that's why I'm on the road, folks. It's to find an audience where an honest man can tell the truth and not have to face a lot of questions from people. And I think I've found it here tonight. So much I'd like to tell you, but I am just reporting the news from Lake Wobegon this last week. It was toast and jelly days in Lake Wobegon, which is our big food festival. Other towns got the good ones, you know. They got rhubarb days and sweet corn days and tomato days. And it was pretty much a choice between toast and jelly and broccoli days for us. So we chose toast and jelly. There were toast races. There was a jelly contest. There was a blanket toss. After people had had the eating contest, there was a blanket toss. The volunteer fire department had a casino down in the fire barn. They moved the trucks out, and they put in about 18 card tables, and they played rap poker in there, the slow man's poker. And up at Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility, there was a pastor dunking booth with Father Wilmer and Pastor Inkvis taking turns sitting on the little bench there above the tank of water, and with wan smiles on their faces as their parishioners lined up. It was amazing how many people wanted to pay a dollar to do this. Discouraging for these men of the cloth. And not just the number of people, but also that once people had had their three throws for a dollar, they came right back to the end of the line and wanted to go again. And the fact that they were throwing so hard, I think, upset them a little bit. They kept saying, "You don't have to throw hard, you just have to hit the target to dump the padre in the water." But people were just winging fastballs on him. People were throwing smoke. Old ladies, large women come up and pick up three balls and just hurl it in as hard as they could. And made a man question what his pastorate had been worth. Down at the Lutheran church parking lot, under a tent, there was the Jell-O mold contest. There were three judges and a lot of entries, and it was pretty competitive. When you are an artist working in the Jell-O mold medium, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of imagination to do this. The woman who made up the gray Jell-O mold that was shaped exactly like the human brain was rightfully proud of her work. There was a paradise lagoon all made from Jell-O, blue and sort of coffee-colored Jell-O. And there was Jell-O in the shape of sushi. But when the judges came down to the end and they saw the Last Supper done in Jell-O, with our Lord and his apostles there, on a mirror with a picture frame around it, and they had lime outfits, and they had strawberry faces, and their hair was made of coffee jello. Why, of course, the judges could not give the prize to the Last Supper, this being Lake Wobegon. There was a lot of recrimination about that, a lot of unhappiness about it. It's a hard-fought contest year after year. A lot of people thought the brain should have won. There was a lot of thought went into that, but it was good to walk around, get the news, talk to people you hadn't seen for a while and find out what had happened to them, good and bad, and then the rest of the news that's hard to figure out. Florin Krebsbach had a little heart attack about a week ago, a little cardiac episode. Heard all about that. He was playing poker down at the fire department. Glad to tell everybody about it. He was sitting in his recliner chair watching the Home Shopping Network, and he felt nausea. And he turned off the TV and still felt nausea and felt kind of woozy. Myrtle was gone, so he called up Gary and Leroy, the town constables, and they came up, gave him oxygen, and they took him down to Dr. Bill DeHaven's office down by the mercantile, who gave him all kinds of tests and hooked up the electrodes and blood pressure and all the rest of it. And then Dr. DeHaven looked at Florian, who's in his extremely late 70s, and told him that unless he changed his ways, he probably was going to have a much worse heart attack in the next year or so. Dr. DeHaven, our town doctor, is about 6'3 and weighs about 290 pounds. He's one of the last of the chain smokers in town. So when he talks to you about your health, it gets your attention. It's sort of like if the town drunk took you aside and told you he thought you were drinking too much. You'd pay attention to it. So Florian went home. Myrtle had gotten home by then. She was just in an uproar. As soon as she heard it, she was crying and running around the house. She threw out the Crisco. She threw out the butter, the frozen onion rings, and a couple bags of everything else. She called up her sister in Minneapolis. She got a number of recipes involving bulgur wheat. And she called up the Poplars, the restaurant in St. Cloud, and canceled their reservation for Sunday dinner, which has been a standing reservation ever since the kids grew up and moved away. Florin and Myrtle have always gone to the Poplars, which is an old-fashioned restaurant. It's run by Fred and Gladys Poplar. And it's the sort of place where you have your choice between prime rib or walleye. But lest the people who order the walleye should feel cheated, it's covered with melted cheese. It's a restaurant where folks like to go in on Sunday, and you always start off with a big double Manhattan, and the hors d'oeuvres are brought out, which is always herring and olives and a lot of cheese dip, and maybe you have another double Manhattan, and then your prime rib comes, which occupies an entire platter by itself. There's a little side dish of au gratin potatoes, and maybe a little coleslaw for decoration. And then there's a little separate dish that has some green beans in it. But you don't have to eat them or anything. They're there, the ceremonial green beans. You can still get your dessert without eating them. And everyone does. All these old people go to the Poplars and have this tremendous dinner, sit there and whack those calories, and people walk out of there just dazed. People have come out of the Poplars and gotten into the wrong car and then have gotten into fights with people who told them it was the wrong car. Well,
Those days are over for Florian. Now his one luxury of the day is a glass of red wine that he has in the evening sitting on the porch. It's really pretty good. It's really not that bad, he said. People said, well, how are you feeling? Well, he said, could be worse. That's our philosophy. As long as it could possibly be worse, then it's not that bad. Probably it never will be that bad. When we get to that point, we won't care. Everybody went up from Toast and Jelly Days up to the ballpark to see the Lake Wobegon Whippets lose to the Freeport Flyers. They had one game about 2 o'clock on Sunday, lost by a score of 11-2. Game only lasted about an hour and a half, but it seemed twice as long as that. It's really a slow game. The high point was in the sixth inning when three wild turkeys got on the field. Turkeys who had great lateral movement, and they eluded their pursuers, men running all over looking for them, chasing them, and of course the crowd cheering for the turkeys. It was much better than the ball game. Finally, a dog came on the field and he flushed these turkeys. They flew up onto the scoreboard and they stayed up there for a while until the Flyers scored the run that made it 10-2. And when the scorekeeper flapped that one down and knocked the nine up, it spooked the turkeys and they flew back down on the field. And the umpires decided just to let them be there. There wasn't that much going on. They weren't hurting anybody. They wandered around behind second base for a while, and when the game was over, they left along with everyone else. The big story about the ball game was that Ronnie, our center fielder, who gets really depressed when the team loses, went home after the game and was stabbed in the chest by his wife. He had sat in the parking lot for a while, Rhonda, his wife, had heard, with his old girlfriend, Sheila, and had kissed her. Friends of Rhonda's called and told her that. And Ronnie was a little late getting home, so she had time to think about it. She asked him about it when he came in the door. He said, it's none of your business, and she reached for a butcher knife. And she plunged it into his chest deep enough so it stayed there. Then she picked up the phone and called the ambulance. They took him to the hospital with the knife still sticking in him. Seldom ever see this in St. Cloud, so all the doctors came to look at it. They removed it and they stitched it up, and he headed back to town and went straight to the sidetrack tap. He felt that he needed a drink and deserved one at that point. He walked in. He looked kind of gray. There were about 15 patrons in the bar. They asked him what had happened. He told them. He said, I went home and my wife stuck a knife in my chest. He opened his shirt and showed them. Big, angry, red, diagonal gash with all little stitch marks. Still bleeding a little bit. He seemed a little proud of it. Well, where is Rhonda now, they said. Well, she's at home, he said. At home? Well, where do you think she should be? Well, didn't you call the police? Yes, he said, for some reason I did. I don't know why. They came, they wanted me to press charges. But I couldn't do that. I love her. I love her. And I knew she was mean when I married her. Well, he looked at them and he could see they truly did not understand. He said, I love her. You think I could put the woman I love into jail? What sort of man do you take me for? Sure, she tried to kill me. But she didn't succeed. And
When it's your time to go, you go, that's all. And I gave her cause, and I love her, I'm crazy about her. He looked at him, he said, you don't understand love at all, do you? None of you. What am I doing wasting my time in here? He left. A couple minutes later, Sheila came in, the girlfriend. She's kind of a large woman who likes white shorts, and she has big blonde hair teased out, paints her fingernails black, and smokes cigarettes. She sat down and ordered rum and coke. She said, Ronnie was supposed to meet me here. We were going to talk. Somebody said, you shouldn't be chasing around after Ronnie, Sheila. He's a married man. Ha, who's chasing who, she said. Poor man, he's miserable. Idiot woman he married keeps him locked up like a dog on a leash. He's unhappy. Rhonda came in. She was looking for Ronnie, and instead she found Sheila. A couple of patrons left the bar at this point. Rhonda reached over and picked up an empty beer bottle, and she cracked off the bottom, and she held the jagged edge up to Sheila's neck, and she said, if you fool around with him anymore, I'm going to rearrange your face, and that's a promise, I mean it. Well, then, of course, Ronnie came in. It wouldn't have been complete without him coming in at this point. He came in, and he grabbed onto Rhonda. He said to Sheila, he said, you're upsetting my wife. He told Rhonda he loved her. She said, I can fight my own battles. And she turned and she hit him as hard as she could, right in the chest. Oh. Oh, he went down on the floor. And the floor of the sidetrack tap is no place you'd ever want to be. Oh. Sheila looked at Rhonda. Rhonda looked at Sheila. Rhonda said, we used to be best friends, you and me. And Sheila burst into tears, and they put their arms around each other. And they helped Ronnie up from the floor, and the three of them left together. It was like opera. Wally watched them go out across the street. Ronnie tried to start his car. It wouldn't start. They all three of them got into Sheila's car, started it, and they drove away. Just as Gary and Leroy, the constables, came in and said, what's going on in here? Oh, not that much, said Wally. You know people. Ronnie and Sheila and Rhonda drove away, and they drove up the hill, and then they drove past the Lutheran Church parking lot just as the Jell-O contest entries were being packed back into the Tupperware containers so they could be taken home and refrigerated for a week before being thrown out. Someone had tasted the brain and asked Judy Inquist, who made the brain jello mold, said, this tastes pretty good. It doesn't look good, but it tastes good. What did you put in this? Jello. What else? They said. Vodka. Just for texture. So a number of people ate the brain. And pretty soon people started singing, there's a long, long trail winding into the land of my dreams. And someone started playing the piano, and there was dancing. Pastor Inquist, making his way up from the Dunk the Pastor booth, sodden, discouraged, cold, looked and saw his wife dancing with another man, her face turned up in silhouette, smiling, laughing, and felt the knife of jealousy plunge deep in his heart. Oh, we're ordinary people. These things are too much for us. This warm weather. We're not romantics in Lake Wobegon. We've known romantics, and they've taught us not to be romantics, to live a quiet and a peaceable life. The other life is for the raccoons. The raccoons who carry on their swashbuckling battles for territory every spring. We hear them outdoors screeching and weeping and crying out. And the winners take over the creek bed, and the winners take over the young females, and the losers go and lie weeping in ditches until finally they fling themselves into the path of speeding cars. This is not the life for us. We want a peaceful summer. We just need it to get a little bit warmer. We need it. A little sweet corn is what we need. And we need some Lebensfrieden, life's peace. That's the news from Lake Wobegon. Where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average. Thank you, Pat Donahue. Our show coming to you from Canada. From Vancouver, British Columbia, the jewel of British Columbia, the home of Simon Fraser University, here on the banks of the Simon Fraser River, the University of British Columbia as well, the home of opera and a great symphony orchestra and theater and ballet, the home of wonderful coffee and the old town down here, Gas Town, which was named for my ancestors. And Natalie McMaster, going to come out here with her wonderful fiddle.
Hey, yeah, I'm ready.
What you going to play for us, Natalie?
I'm going to play a tune that's called, and this isn't a misprint, Flee as a Bird. And I'm going to follow that up with some reels.
Okay, there you go. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie McMaster. Dancing, playing the fiddle up here from Cape Breton Island in Nova Scotia. And we want to thank especially the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation for making our visit to Vancouver possible, the Communications and Technical Departments, and the Radio Performance Division. Thanks to Vicki Gabbereau, Bill Richardson, Bob Robertson, and Linda Cullen. Thanks to our guests, Laboutine Souriant, Natalie McMaster, Pierre Ambert, our actors, Sue Scott and Tim Russell, our sound effects man, Mr. Tom Keith. Thanks to the guys, all-star Shoeband Geese, Shoeband, Rich Dworsky, Andy Stein, Pat Donahue, Greg Hippen, and Arnie Kinsella. Thanks to our staff, Alan Freckman, Kay Gornick, Kate Gustafson, Katie Rechtall, Chris Harwood, Scott Edwards, Jeff Johnson, Jason Keeler, Rob Knowles, and Russ Ringsack. Thanks to our French translator tonight, Lise Lemieux. Eh? Eh? Our associate producer, Stevie Beck. Technical director, Scott Rivard. Our producer, Christine Cheetah. A Prairie Home Companion made possible by Land's End Direct Merchants, where your order will be filled in one day and delivered almost anywhere just two business days later. Our program written by Natalie Drest, Guy Wire, Pete Moss, Pop Rivets, and Jeff Schaefer, Bill Richardson, Russ Ringsack, War and Peace, Norman Conquest, Manual Transmission, and all the others. Oh, Pierre and Natalie, we're a long way from home, all of us. This is a song that I love when I get far away. Maybe this audience will join us as we go off. Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. Home, home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. How often at night, when the heavens are bright with a light from the glittering stars, have I stood there amazed and asked as I gazed if their beauty exceeds that of ours. Home, home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy. That's our show from Vancouver. Thank you, everybody. Good night. We'll see you next time.